You are listening to the Developing Up Podcast.
This is the podcast focused on the non-technical side of being a developer.
Good afternoon, Mike. How's it going?
It's going good, Jake. It's sunny out, and it's a quarter past five. I can't believe it.
It's a little bit hard to believe what the weather was doing this weekend compared to what it is doing now, but that's New England weather for you.
Yeah. I mean, we live in it for a reason. We understand it, but It's always fun when it's sunny, when you leave the office and it's still sunny. I love that.
Yeah, it's actually really nice out right now. Have you been outside today?
I have not. I've been a little code monkey today, hiding in my cave.
Mike here has a new system. Do you want to tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, Jake, I'll just say a little bit. I've been learning about Deep Work by Cal Newport. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, but it's basically how to remove distractions from yourself, and or it's almost actually you schedule time for distractions and then you save the rest of the time to focus on like single items, such as prepping for a podcast episode or working on a session presentation. So it's been pretty interesting.
That's really cool. I've actually been utilizing a new system. I don't think we should go into it right now, but maybe it would be worth revisiting the productivity conversations. Or
you mean the plan. Productivity conversations?
I said productivity because you like saying productivity, but I really meant productivity. New systems, new things to try, maybe worth kind of looping back to every once in a while.
Yeah. So welcome, listeners, to Developing Up. If you're new, thanks for joining us. And if you're returning, thank you for
joining us.
Yeah. We always like repeat listeners. And today we're talking about developers' favorite topic,
which is
estimating.
So I actually like estimating. Really is my favorite topic.
Really? What do you think of estimating, Jake? Give me your thoughts.
So I will say that I don't love estimating, but I do think that it is a really important part of what we do as developers. I also feel like it's something that I've gotten rather good at least for the technologies that I work within. And when someone is seeking out an estimate from me, I am generally able to provide a relatively accurate one. That's assuming I get the details that I need and have all the facts.
I think that's an important point to hit on.
But something tells me that you don't quite feel the same way.
So I have a love-hate relationship with estimates. And I mean, I don't think I'm the only one who feels this way. I've read lots of things about estimating and development. It's hard, Jake. I think that's what I don't like about it, is that it's, I don't like hard things. I like easy stuff. No. Most estimates, I'm going to go out and say, there's no way you can provide an accurate estimate. There's just usually too many variables and things change way too often in a project, in my experience.
That is very true. We spoke in our previous episode about in building a development plan, the need to be able to pivot, take a step back and readjust based on the needs of the project. And you can't stop a project and then go back to the estimating phase.
Yeah, it depends on the project, but most of the time, you're right, you can't, Jake. And what I'll say, my number one gripe with estimates is that estimates are guesses. Usually it's something new that you're going to be working on that you've never done before, so you provide your best guess as a developer. But people take those guesses as commitments, and they think the number you give them is what it's going to take, not realizing that, you know, there's variables in play and it could take longer, it could take not as long. And so what I dislike about estimates is how they're treated as commitments when they shouldn't be.
Right. And I think we'll get into this a little bit more in a bit, Mike, but we have some tips as to what you can do as a developer when you're providing an estimate that doesn't bind you into an obligatory contract, so to speak.
Yeah. Now, that being said, we have different opinions of the value of estimates, but I think we can agree that the underlying skills needed to deliver estimates, it's very important to your development career.
Very important. And also not something that can just be taught.
Yeah, it's something you have to work on and improve on, and to borrow an agile methodology, iterate over and just get better at.
It's very true, and it's something that will come in years of time, not even just months.
Yeah, but also in years of times, estimating is still going to be hard. I'm just going to say that.
Right. You're always going to face new challenges.
Yeah. But some of the things, you know, your ability to estimate, why it's important is because, one, you're always going to have to do it. Like you're just saying, Jake, for years, if you're a developer and you're working as a developer for years, you're going to have to be asked to provide estimates a lot.
Another thing that's really difficult about doing estimates is that they're not always just task-based. So if I ask you to provide me an estimate based on how long a project's going to take you, Mike, you could look at all the features that the project needs and give me a number based on that. But how do you know how much time we have? How often are the meetings going to be? How big is your team going to be? Different developers or different members of different teams bill out at different rates. So when it comes to crunching all those numbers together, that's also, for me, one of the most difficult parts of estimating.
Yeah, or even being asked how many people, like how many bodies do you need to get this done?
But anyway, I cut you off. We were talking about how important it is, not how tough it is. I think we've established how tough it is.
But Jake, that goes into what's important, because you're going to have to estimate more than just a project or just individual tasks. You're probably going to be faced with estimating a lot as a developer. I mean, I guess I just said that, but you know, in terms of estimating how long a meeting might take, or how long you may need to write a review or write documentation, or
how long is it going to take to go through the QA phase?
Yeah.
How would you ever know?
Yeah.
Right.
Man, QA is about finding bugs.
Right.
Estimate how many bugs are we going to find on this project?
Zero.
Yeah.
No bugs.
That's the estimate always, yeah, for bugs.
But estimating also has some really great things that it can do for you as a developer and as a developer who is stepping into a leadership role, right? So people are looking up to you for answers. And this is something that we've discussed in previous episodes, but it allows you to think critically. It gives you the opportunity to ask insightful questions. It gives you the opportunity to uncover potential holes that have been introduced in the project so far, maybe things that no one has thought of, problems with the UX or a user flow. If there is going to be some sort of third-party integration, well, have we actually read the documentation yet? Things like that can open other people's eyes to the complexities of a project and make them look at you as a thought leader, so to speak.
Jake, that's a great point, being able to ask insightful questions, as well as how well you communicate and collaborate with your team or even with your clients when it reaches the phase of the project where you have to provide estimates. If you're in the leadership role, the rest of your team's going to look at you to communicate with, I don't know, project managers or whomever you have to deliver estimates to. And they're also going to look at you to collaborate with them and help maybe junior developers come up with estimates.
You know what, Mike? In discussing this, I think I've realized what I like about estimating. And it's not the actual act of estimating. It's the ability to uncover unknowns and set forth numbers while communicating with the team and getting everyone else on the same page. Because a project feels a lot more organized and on track to me once it's been estimated than it does in the early stages. So that's what I like about it.
I can understand your thinking, Jake. I'm still not willing to say I like estimates yet, but you're on the right track. And one of the final benefits we'll probably get into with being able to develop estimates is that, I mean, you're going to have to defend those estimates, and we'll talk about that. But being able to defend your actions as a developer is an important part. And knowing how to do that respectfully, yet firmly, establishes your credibility as an expert in your field.
It sure does. And the fact that you're going to have to defend your estimations is also good exercise for you to really make sure that you're thinking about everything the right way. Every decision that you make in your estimate needs to be objective, and you need to be able to make every decision knowing that you're going to back it up. It's kind of like what they say if you study design. You shouldn't never do anything on a whim because you like the way it looks from an aesthetic standpoint. Everything is a design decision because you're problem solving. So every decision you make when you're designing should reinforce some sort of end goal.
Jake, you just single-handedly bridged the gap between developers and designers.
I did it. All right, cool. We're done, right?
We're done, yeah.
All right, thanks, everyone.
That's
the show.
That's it. I can't believe you did that. No, wow. I'm very impressed with that phrase.
So yeah, there you have it, Mike. That's one reason you should be ready to defend your decisions is ideally because you're making smart choices that have objectives behind them.
Yeah, you're not just implementing functionality or a task for the heck of it. Every decision you make has a purpose and a point to your project. All right, so let's talk about how to provide clearer estimates to help inform our listeners, Jake.
That sounds good. So let me ask you, Mike, when you actually sit down to do an estimate, do you just start looking at functionality and start cranking on a spreadsheet? Do you have any systems in place or... He's shaking his head. Mike's shaking his head.
I would not just sit down and start like spewing out numbers, whether it's time, cost, or effort numbers. There's some pre-planning that goes into providing an accurate and clear estimate. So before developing an estimate, the first thing you need to know going into it is that your estimate's going to be off. Having that mindset and knowing that any number you provide in the long run, it's not going to be the exact number. Maybe sometimes it would be, and when that happens, then you tend to think, oh, what actually went wrong where I got the number right. But knowing that what you're going to base your estimate is the current snapshot of your project or your task or your ask, whatever you're being asked to estimate, is that a snapshot of what the current conditions are and that those are going to change by the time you're well into development. I start with that, making sure I get into that mindset that I don't know everything and what I do know is only at the current state.
And at this state, Mike, are you reiterating to whoever you're providing the estimate to that it is not going to be accurate no matter what happens?
I always say that. I'll say, I can do my best to provide you with my best guess at how long this is going to take, but either I've never done this before or I have to find out what I don't know about it yet.
That's one great takeaway here. Always just set the bar low for yourself. not a good way to think in general in life, but when it comes to estimating, you really, really need to set the expectation that it is not going to be 100% accurate. There are always going to be way too many variables to make that an even remote possibility.
Yeah. And with that, I think the next step, again, still before working on an estimate, it's trying to get rid of as many of the unknowns as you can. So this is where your ability to ask questions comes into play, working with your team to gain an understanding of as many of the unknowns as possible.
This is the phase that I like to have a kickoff, or I suppose when we're providing estimates, Mike, you're on the back end, I'm on the front end, so our process is a little bit different and the criteria is also a little bit different as well. From a front end standpoint, we need to be looking through the user flow. We need to understand what aspects, some of the more dynamic parts that we're going to be responsible for. And then we also want to look at the creative. How high fidelity the creative is a big determination of what our numbers become. It's really interesting how often something will look like it is reused all over the place in UX, but then when it gets into design, it's been reinvented in 10 different ways, which can multiply exponentially the amount of work that we need to do. So in providing those estimates, or rather before providing those estimates, sitting down and getting walked through all of the work that has been done thus far on the project from front to back is really where I like to start.
I think you can abstract that, Jake, you know, for both front end and back end or any development, it's asking, what don't I currently understand about what I'm looking at? How can I gain a better understanding of what I'm expecting? So like sitting down with creatives and being walked through their design decisions, or with UX and getting a walkthrough of the user flows and the sort of expected functionality. It's asking, what don't I currently know?
Right. You actually said it earlier, eliminating as many of the unknowns as possible by asking questions.
Yeah. So yeah, asking out loud the questions, I don't know what X does. I don't understand why. Getting insights to the best of your abilities before you start working on an estimate.
Also, depending on the project, there's likely going to be a lot of questions that go unanswered because the answer simply doesn't exist yet. So you can't necessarily wait till all of your questions have been answered before you start your estimate. And that's okay. You just need to accept it for what it is. However, when you actually do go into developing your estimate, you need to make sure that there is a list of those unknowns, a list of those unanswered questions or those variables that could potentially impact your estimate. And that is something that you need to constantly over communicate to whomever you're providing the estimate to. So assumes this, or don't know what this is. So this estimate is subject to change potentially drastically based on what we don't know so far.
Yeah. And that comes directly from when you're, you know, asking those questions. Like you're saying, Jake, you may not have enough time to ask all the questions you want or to wait for answers. So as long as you set that up when you start working on your estimate, that I'm going to go forward coming up my estimate. However, you know, these things are subject. We don't know this. I'm going to make assumption about this. And over-communicating that is a great way to go about that.
Mike, you wrote this in the outlines, and I really like this. Establish what you know versus what you do not know and make assumptions where needed.
Yeah, because you're going to have a task you're going to have to estimate, and there's probably going to be an important part of it that you just don't know about. And the only way to get through it is to make an assumption about how it's going to work. And so you can use your best developer knowledge to make the assumption of how maybe a third party might integrate with your system, or what needs to happen after a user submits a form, or whatever the action may be. You make an assumption, make sure to record that assumption, and then build, like, you fill in the gaps yourself until you know what actually is going to go into them.
Right. Another tactic that I've used in the past is, let's say you're integrating a third party, and there are a couple different ways that it could be integrated. Perhaps it's mostly done through the backend with the Drupal module, or maybe there's a JavaScript API. Those could both take very different amount of times. So one thing I could do is reach out to you and say, hey, Mike, I'm thinking for the JavaScript portion of this, it may be this much. For the backend portion, I don't know how to answer that. Could you provide some insight? And then that gives us the opportunity to collaborate on an estimate together. And it also can reveal different paths that can be taken. Maybe there are strengths and weaknesses to either of those approaches. Maybe one works better but costs more. And that is then an option that you can provide in your estimate. So your estimate is not just X hours, it can be X to Y hours,
and
depending on what decisions are made.
And what you just brought up, Jake, is an important part about when you start working on developing an estimate. Just because you, the developer, are asked doesn't mean you have to develop it alone. If you have a team that you can work with, maybe of different expertise, you can collaborate, and you should collaborate and ask for insights and help. Maybe someone who has more experience than you do, or someone who has a different expertise than you do that ties into what you're trying to estimate.
This is why you should make good office connections.
Oh, nice tie-in to the last episode,
right?
Office connections.
But yeah, it's really important, and you shouldn't go it alone. It's always good, even if you're really confident, I would say get another set of eyes on it, even if it's just for a sanity check. It's always good to get some outside feedback, and perhaps there is something you missed, or there could be, this has happened to me, Mike, where I am doing something in a spreadsheet and I end up duplicating a line, and that line has a big number in it, and then the total at the end ends up being super inflated and we came in under budget. Nice. I'm just kidding. But no, it helps have someone, even if they're just, you know, fact checking you.
And I'll say, yeah, that's another great point, Jake. And we've actually started doing this more and more on my team. Actually, me and my boss have done this a lot, where either they will come up with an estimate for a whole project, where we're at the phase of our careers where we do whole projects, and we'll talk about how we do that in a little bit. Or I'll develop an estimate for a whole project, and then we'll trade with each other, or we'll ask, hey, can you take a look at this just to see, you know, what you think, get your eyes on it? Because they may catch things that you didn't think about, or again, they may approach things from a different perspective and answer some questions that you didn't know how to answer. Provide some great insight that way. Another thing that I always try to do with estimating, and I think is important to do, is to under promise and over deliver with your estimates.
So when you say under promise, you mean keep the numbers as light as possible?
What I mean with that is go in, this is going to sound negative, not to promote negativity, but go in with a pessimistic point of view. Don't be over optimistic about your numbers. As developers, in my experience, we tend to be egotistical, maybe. We're very confident in our abilities. That's a better way to say it. So we have the likelihood that we will think we could do something a lot faster than we could do. And it's worse to deliver an estimate that has low numbers that takes longer to accomplish than deliver an estimate that has higher numbers that you deliver in a quicker amount of time.
In the latter situation, you also have the ability to do something above and beyond for the client that could set the relationship on a really good tone for future work. And when it comes to the former situation where you're estimating numbers in a more optimistic manner, an important thing to keep in mind is that maybe you could do it in that time, hopefully. Maybe you could do it in that time, but what if a junior staff member is actually going to be the one working on this project and they have 5 or 10 years less experience than you do? It's going to take them a little bit longer. So I always try to factor in the lowest common denominator when I'm creating my estimates based on who could potentially be working on the project and carrying that estimate out. So yeah, Mike, under-promising, over-delivering, totally agree. And I know what you mean. It's not meant to sound pessimistic. It's not supposed to sound like you should always pad things and over-inflate things to make sure that you're always in the right and coming out on top. It's not like that at all. It's not about under-promising. It's about being realistic.
Yeah, that's essentially what it's about. It's about being realistic. And if you wanted to think of it another way, no one likes it if you have to come back and ask for more time or more money, but people love it if you say, I got this done faster or cheaper than I said it was going to take.
Right.
Now, that's not to say artificially inflate your numbers, but use, like you're saying, Jake, the realistic number or a little higher than that instead of the optimistic, everything is going to go perfect number.
So Mike, what that reminds me of was a estimation method from a book that you actually recommended to me. This was the PERT method. This was in the Clean Coder, which I believe we've spoken about on the show before. I'll give credit to Mike here. This was in his portion of the show notes. And when you were saying the words optimistic and pessimistic, this is what came to mind for me. And then I realized you actually had it in the show notes.
All right. We're on the same wavelength, Jake.
I love it. Do you want to tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, I'll give a high overview of it. So the PERT method, some background, it was actually developed in the 1950s by the U.S. Navy. And it actually involves some math, and we're not going to start spouting out functions and math equations on the show, but we'll put links to it in the show notes. Basically, when you come up with an estimate, you recognize that the estimate's going to be a range, and you develop three numbers. An optimistic number, which is, if everything were to go perfectly, what's the number? What's the optimistic number? Then you have your nominal value, which is, I like to think of it as a gut feel of, you know, how long do you think it's going to take, or what's the number?
And so that could be like the more cautious.
Yeah, the more cautious, but kind of the realistic number, just your gut, what's it telling you? And then you have the pessimistic number, which is, if everything goes wrong, short of a nuclear bomb going off, what's that number look like? So you take those three values, optimistic, nominal, and pessimistic. And then in his book, Robert C. Martin lists out a mathematical formulation that you plug those numbers into, and it basically gives you the standard deviation, so what to add plus or minus to your value. So this task can take 3 hours plus or minus 6 or something like that. So that gives you a range of numbers to deliver. And what I've done in the PERT method in the past have actually taken that standard deviation number and used that to deliver that with the plus added. So like, I think the nominal number plus the standard deviation, and that's the estimate I provide.
I like that. I was going to ask you if you had done this in the past, and if so, if you had provided those three numbers, because I could see in receiving those three numbers, they're so different. Without understanding the approach that you took, it could be difficult to know which one to go to the client with.
Yeah, I mean,
but that was a good approach, and the difference that you made.
Yeah, I always side on caution, and so I use, you know, the higher of the values. I just don't go all the way pessimistic. And a fun challenge to our listeners, since this is based off a math formula, you can write some code to generate your PERT estimate numbers, which is one thing I did a couple of years ago. I wrote a little script to do it, and that's for a while how I generated my estimates.
That's awesome.
You put in the three numbers, and they would tell you what the standard deviation number is.
So you can go to developingup.com/18. This is episode number 18, and we will have the PERT method in more detail in the show notes, and you can get that formula.
Yes.
so you can complete Mike's code challenge.
That means I have to figure out how to type in the mathematical symbols into our show notes, but we will get it done.
All right. So the next one, playing poker. And I love poker, so I'm excited to talk about this one.
Have you used planning poker before, Jake?
I have not, and it says here that it's popular in agile methodologies. I've only worked on several small bits of truly agile projects. A lot of what we do here is waterfall using agile terminology. Yes. Mike's rolling his eyes.
What I like to call whitewater.
White waterfall. I like that.
Anyway, planning poker. What I like about the planning poker method for estimates is it really requires you to work with others when developing estimates. It's not a one-person show. The basic premise is that you get together with however many people you require. Maybe it could just be you and another person developing the estimates. And whatever number system you want to use, whether it's coming up with price values or hour numbers or, you know, story points, estimate numbers, everyone in the group, when you're talking about one task, everyone holds up a card, or you can do it virtually, of what the number is they think it is. And then you discuss why you defend your reason, and then you do it again and again and again until everyone comes up to about the same number. You're trying to get everyone to agree on what the number should be.
I like this particularly because it involves a group dynamic and putting more heads together to come up with a more informed estimate is more effective than just doing it by yourself.
Yeah, because you're going to get different inputs from different people about why they're defending their choice. Like, I picked this number because of these reasons. And then you can think, oh, I didn't even realize that. Now I need to change my number.
Right. Or someone could have a different approach than you would have that could be quicker. So you could be like, oh, I never thought of it that way. And there you go.
Yeah. So it's a good way to do it, like estimate by committee, pretty much. And then another way is, this is kind of what I think of planning poker as a single person, is what I call comparative estimating. And this is where you take past work you've done that is of a similar vein of what you're trying to estimate and use that in comparing the numbers of what you estimated for that task or the actual values from that task, and then using that to inform what you're going to estimate for the current work.
Let me ask you a question, Mike, and this is a little bit of a more ethically philosophical question.
Oh boy.
So let's say you're creating an estimate and there is XYZ functionality, and you go back through your previous estimates, you saw that you estimated it at this time, but when it comes down to how reusable that code is, and as developers, we're always trying to find efficiencies. Every time you do something, you try to find a way to automate it or at least have it so you can reuse it easily. If you were able to just pretty much take that code and move it from project X to project Y, project A to project B, should that cut down the amount of time that you put into your estimate?
I would say no, Jake, because here's the reason. Even if you can reuse a piece of, in this case, code, every project has its own nuances and you're going to have to change it some way. Unless you're building very cookie cutter items where you can literally copy paste, you're going to have to change something, and you don't know the impact of what you have versus what it's actually going to have to be. So it may save you some time, but you still can't guarantee that's going to wipe out all the work.
I agree. And also, just because the work is done before doesn't decrease its value. There's this analogy that I heard. Someone loses their power and they call the electrician, and it's at some crazy hour of the night. And this isn't a real story, by the way. Electrician shows up, goes, finds the meter, presses a button, turns the light back on, and says, that'll be $5,000. And the person who lost the power goes, hey, $5,000, why would it be that much? You are only here for like 5 seconds. And he's like, yeah, so it's $5 for the 5 seconds I was here, and it is $4,995 for knowing which button to push. I always like that analogy.
Yeah, I've heard similar stories. And to put comparative estimating into perspective, Jake, you've done a lot of editing on our episodes.
I have.
Right? I have two questions for you.
Okay.
How long do you estimate this episode's going to be? And how long do you estimate it'll take you to edit out all the ums?
So we're at 36 minutes right now. I'm anxious to see what 36 minutes sounds like after it's edited. It'll probably be more like 32. That's not an estimate, though. It's a guess. Estimating is guessing. I don't know. I guess it depends. I can't answer that question, Mike, because I don't know how long this episode's going to go. I don't know how many ums. I haven't been counting. Maybe there's less than normal. Maybe there's more than normal. But I would say that on average, I spend between 6 and 9 hours per episode editing. So I'm going to say 8, and I'll be comfortable with that 8. It's subject to change, though.
But what you used there was you were comparing what you've done on previous episodes, which are similar items to this one. So you compared what you've done in the past to similar items to what it will take you for this one. Whether you're right or not, it's up in the air, but you can have a more accurate answer.
You're right. You're very right. I feel very uncomfortable that you put me on the spot like that.
All right. Let's go down to another method then, Jake.
Sounds good.
The final one is what I labeled the breakdown.
I like the breakdown method a lot. This is the method that I use when it comes to estimating. And I can't speak for you and the back end technologies, Mike, but this is very, very conducive to what we do on the front end.
So the breakdown is basically this. Humans are bad at estimating, all humans, not just developers, especially estimating large items. So the smaller we can make items, the more single track we can make them, the technically easier they're going to be to estimate. So what you do is you take the task you have in front of you and you break it down to the smallest workable chunks that you can, and then estimate those little chunks, because the likelihood for error is going to be less than if you're trying to estimate a whole big thing with a lot of variables. So you're cutting out variables and you're making something to a closer to a known quantity that you can then estimate, and then you add up those smaller estimates to get the bigger one.
Right.
Basically the breakdown.
When you go to build an application or a website, you don't just sit down and do it. You need to think about each piece individually and how it's going to all come and fit together in the end. And that's essentially what this breakdown method of estimating is. You're trying to look at every little different aspect of each feature of the integration and treat that as its own isolated number. And I believe what you'll find, and this is what I've found every single time I do it, some things are accurate. Some things end up taking a lot longer than I would have estimated. But some things also take a lot shorter too. And in an ideal world, it all kind of evens out and smooths over to around the same number that you end up with when you add all those smaller broken down items up into one big number.
Yeah, the errors kind of cancel each other out. That goes along with, have you ever heard of the law of large numbers?
I have not.
All right, so I'm not going to get into it. But it's basically the more numbers and values you have, the less errors you have, basically. Something like that. We'll link to it in the show notes. Okay, so those are a couple methods that you can use to develop an estimate. The PERT method, planning poker, comparative estimating, and the breakdown.
It's also worth saying that those aren't the only four methods.
No, those are just a few of many, many methods out there.
And a mix of some of those may be better for you, or you may have a different method of estimating. I'd be curious to hear about that if you do. All right, Mike, so we have outlined some methods of creating an estimate. What happens when you actually have created the estimate and you send it off?
Yeah, the scary part, delivering your estimate. And this could break some developers when doing it. I mean, it could be very nerve-wracking, especially if it's for a large task. Maybe you're delivering it to a client or to your boss. It can be scary. The number one thing you need to do is provide context around your estimate. This goes into what we talked about, listing out the assumptions that you've come up with or that you are using for your estimate. Maybe some risk factors that you're identifying, why maybe a number is what it is. Just as much information as you can provide around the numbers that you're delivering.
And on top of that, the assumptions that you make based on the information you have, because many aspects of the numbers you provided rely on outside factors. So if you need to estimate a certain aspect of a project, the client may need to provide us something. So that is contingent on the fact that they provide it to us, or that they actually provide it to us. So anyways, yeah, just underscoring, it's about communicating risks, it's about communicating factors, and also about the assumptions that you can make based on what you know.
Yeah, and providing that information helps you better defend your numbers, because what more likely than not is going to happen is you're going to get pushback to say, oh, you know, is this really going to take 6 hours? You know, is there any way you think it could take less? And you are the expert in your field. You're the developer. You need to be able to defend your numbers and provide the reasons why. And you can say, look, I've listed out in my assumptions, this is what it's going to take, and this is why my number is this way. If you can provide me more information, then I could relook at my estimate.
It could also be a yes-if scenario where, yeah, we can cut it down from 6 hours to 3 if we ditch this feature.
That's the very great use of yes-if.
And it's also really important to say no if there really is no other alternative. You can't be expected to pull a rabbit out of your hat, and there's nothing wrong with saying, listen, I wish we could get this done faster, but it just can't. It's going to take 6 hours, and that's what it is. And the confidence that comes along with being able to say that and defend your numbers and push back is going to come with experience. It may not be something you're really comfortable with doing the first time around, but it does get easier. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, when you're new to developing, you're going to feel kind of like it's imposter syndrome if you're defending your numbers, because you may not actually know or have experience. But if you've put in your best effort for your numbers, stick by them and defend them. And then as you gain experience as a developer, you have more of the background to highlight why you chose your numbers.
And if you have gotten another set of eyes on it, preferably from a superior who may be able to speak to the different bullet items on the estimate sheet, then you should feel pretty confident that you've gotten the estimate about as accurate as it can get given what you've been provided.
And with that, what you should then do is make sure to record your estimate. And I'm going to hit this from two different directions. One is to record it for yourself to keep track against future work. This kind of goes back to comparative estimating. Write down what your estimate was for that task. And if you can, write down, once you complete that task, how long it actually took. So you can get a better sense of how long items take you and a better sense of your estimating abilities. And then the other side of that is make sure when you deliver an estimate, everybody signs off on that estimate before it goes off and you do whatever you need to do next in your process. So the person you're giving the estimate to and you've talked to them about it, make sure there's documentation that they've said, yes, I've seen this estimate. We're all on the same page. This is what it is. Let's go with it.
Right.
Because if you don't get that recorded, then there is risk if maybe you work with some people or you have to deal with some people who may not be completely honest, who would say, oh, I've never saw that estimate. I thought you said it was going to take 2 hours when it taking you 6 hours. But you can use it to defend, again, that record to defend your estimate and how long an item took you.
Yeah, unfortunately, keeping that paper trail is necessary, but it's also really useful. And you will find times where you need to refer back to something that was said 6 months ago. Even if someone isn't being sneaky or lying, it's just miscommunications happen.
It's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
So true. Well said, Mike.
Well said. All right, so let's get into some takeaways about estimating.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's lead it off with saying that you should take estimates with a grain of salt. It's not possible to be absolutely definitive in your estimates.
However, estimates are something that you improve on as a developer, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. But there's no silver bullet with learning estimating. It's just time and practice, like anything else in development.
Time and practice. No one can tell you how to do it. No one can teach you how to do it. You just got to get your hands dirty. And then there are also different approaches to providing estimates. It's important to underscore that no one of those approaches are better than another. So best thing to do is experiment, find the approach that works for you. Mike and I discuss the PERT method, planning poker, comparative estimating, and then finally the breakdown. But you should try and see what works for you and what works for your team.
And try them in combination. You may find that using a little bit of each system works very well for you. But yeah, it's all about trying them out.
Good point.
And finally, when you are working on an estimate, be sure that you're asking questions, that you are eliminating as many unknown variables as possible before you start working on it. And then when you deliver your estimate, be sure to include as much information as you can to back up and be able to defend your numbers.
And that information is recorded.
Yes.
So I would like to take this opportunity, Mike, to ask our listeners what kind of estimation methods they have. And then also, if they don't have estimation methods, what intimidates them most or what their biggest hesitance is when it comes to that estimation process. Maybe there's something that we can provide further that will kind of help that struggle. So if you have something that you are willing to share with us, you can tweet us at DevUpPodcast on Twitter. You could also reach us directly via hello@developingup.com or log on to developingup.com/18, as in 1-8. And there you will find the show notes for this episode, as well as any pertinent discussions.
And if you want to help others estimate if this podcast is right for them, maybe go to iTunes and leave a rating, and then we can get the estimate score of our podcast. That's kind of stretching it.
I don't know if that made sense.
But please, it would help us and help other developers if you left us a rating and review on iTunes so other developers can find this podcast.
And tell a friend. We would appreciate it.
Tell a friend, yeah.
Tell a friend who can relate, and we'll grow the family.
Okay. I'm going to go out in the sunshine, Jake, before the day's over.
All right. I'm going to retreat back to my bat cave.
All right. Thank you for listening, and until episode 19.
Until episode 19. We will see you all later.